Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, the big news today, Kamala Harris, the VP choice, and I don't think that's really I don't think anybody's really surprised by it. As I said earlier, I think she's the safe choice. I think she was the one everybody thought had the inside straight because of the campaign, because of a lot of exposure. I just think she was the safe choice. And we can all say we had our favorite or whatever, but it is what it is, and we'll see where it takes us. And here to share some thoughts on the choice of Kamala Harris as Joe Biden's running mate, I've asked our good friend Correa Puttenbaker to come talk with us. Correa is the treasurer of the DNC's Black Caucus, also one of my good gun safety friends. Correa, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, brother. Thanks for having me on again.
So let's just throw that out there. Thoughts on the Harris pick, good, bad, and different?
I absolutely love it. And listening to your intro, and you're saying that Senator Harris was the safe pick. Think about that in context. The black woman was the safe pick. That just is emblematic of how far we've come, because this has not happened before, right? We have a chance to show young girls of color, like my two daughters, that they really can aspire to be some of the most powerful people on the planet. And their skin color, their heritage, isn't going to hold them back, and they too could be seen as the safe pick. I love this pick.
A lot of people on the Twitter is very happy with it. Gotten some blowback because some other folks, you know, they've all got their favorites. Why do you think Harris was the best pick outside of my assessment of the safe pick?
I think she brings some extra stuff to the table that helps balance out the ticket. Joe Biden was not my first pick for president. He was my third.
He was my fifth.
He's not right. I mean, he's not able to do what Barack and Kamala or Cory can do. But that's why you need someone else who can. Joe can't do what Barack can do, and there are some things that Barack can't do that Joe could. They balance each other out. They had a good rapport. And I think that Kamala and Uncle Joe have a similar rapport, and I think that she's able to speak to a segment of the population that maybe he can't, or at least can't do it as well as she could. And I think it's a good balance ticket, but I also think it shows an immense amount of progress in that we have a black woman that's going to be our next vice president. I think that just says an enormous amount of where we've come. I think Dr. King and Malcolm X are doing backflips right now in heaven with this pick.
No, I think it's a good pick. I think it was the right pick. I would have personally. I was pushing more towards Val Demming, but you know, there's reasons for that outside of a bunch of stuff. So where do you see the attack lines? Because right from the start, within like 30 minutes, you had the Trump campaign put out an attack video calling her phony Kamala and Sleepy Joe. And, you know, my first response was, boy, if they'd only responded to the virus as quickly as they responded to the VP choice, boy, we may have had this whip by now.
If only they would work as hard to deal with this pandemic as they work to insult other Americans, we would be much better off than we are right now with this pandemic. We wouldn't have 160,000 Americans dead from it. But I'm looking forward to having a president in our White House who doesn't look to insult people and give stupid, childish names. Sleepy Joe. I mean, that's the dumbest thing on earth. We need someone who's got some sensibility to them and is ready to be president on Donald Trump's 1,000-plus day. He still ain't ready to be president.
Yeah.
I don't care what attack they levy at our ticket. It won't matter. It shows just how desperate they are. Donald Trump does not actually want to be president. He likes the idea of being president. I want someone who actually wants to be president.
And actually wants to lead and solve some of the problems that we clearly have. And there are, you know, an overwhelming number of problems. And as I've been saying the last several days, I think Mitch McConnell and the Republicans are causing as much chaos and grief and as much damage and destruction as possible, so that the next administration spends the next 2 years just figuring out what's wrong, let alone being able to deal with all of these crises that are being created. At least that's my thought.
And that's in addition to trying to wear American voters out by having so much chaos, people might just be apathetic and give up. But that's why it's important for us to remind folks of how it is a moral imperative for you to vote. This idea that you have to be inspired or excited to go vote, to me, is wild. I believe that there are far too many people that fought, bled, and died for our right to vote, that I don't need to be excited or inspired. I'm inspired by the fact that I know we have some sensible folks who can lead on day one and take control of the mess that we're currently in. I'm inspired by having two champions for gun violence prevention being in our White House. I'm inspired by having two folks who are going to make sure we don't have kids in cages at the border. I'm inspired by folks who are going to no longer side with white supremacists, who are going to equivocate on racism and white supremacy. I'm inspired by the fact I get to go vote for a person who picked a black woman for his vice president. This whole thing is a huge cultural shift, and I think all of that in a broader context reminds us where we have been and where we are right now and how much further we have to go, but we are so much closer to making our country a more perfect union now.
No, I'm right there with you. But, you know, here we're in this moment where, you know, after these last 3.5 years, there's still some question of the outcome of this election. And for me, I'll be honest, I think in a fair election, there's no way Donald Trump is reelected. I think most Americans, at least the sane, rational ones, are tired of all of the shenanigans, all of the insanity, all of the, you know, just you know, the fire hose of chaos. My fear is that this election doesn't come down to our votes. It comes down to how many can be stolen, how many can be suppressed, and what the Republicans and Trump can pull off, and especially around what's happening with the Postal Service, with Friday night's massacre and all of the craziness around that. That's my great concern.
And I don't disagree with you. I mean, it's concerning, given, you know, what happened in 2016, where you had Scott Walker and his goons here in Wisconsin, you know, use racist voter ID policy to disenfranchise, you know, poor and people of color, right? So they are trying to use whatever mechanism they can to disincentivize people from voting, whether they want to do it by law or wear them out and make them apathetic. But I think folks are waking up to this and saying, we aren't going to accept that. You're not going to steal my right to vote. We're going to fight tooth and nail to make sure people have adequate access to the ballot box, whether they're mailing their vote in or they're doing it in person, which I hope fewer people do, given this this pandemic. But this is emblematic of what Wisconsin Republicans tried to do this past spring, in that they were trying to have a separate election for the state Supreme Court race that wasn't on the presidential primary ballot, because they knew the presidential primary ballot would draw more people out, and Republicans rely on low voter turnout to win.
Right.
So what ended up happening is that they couldn't get a separate ballot, and they couldn't do away with early voting and things like that. And the Democrat candidate, Jill Karofsky, won by 10 points, something that was not expected. One of my best friends called me that Tuesday back in April, and he was like, yeah, Jill's going to lose. Like, I just can't see how we pull this off. And then she wins by 10 points. If we do our job and remind people how important it is to go vote and remind people when those dates are to mail your ballot back in or request a ballot and things like that, we can win this race. Up and down the ballot, we can win races. But Republicans are going to fight tooth and nail to prevent that from happening, not because their policies are better, but because they only want to hold on to power. If their policy was better, they would want more people to vote for it, because it would be a testament to how good it is. That's not the case what you see here.
No, you're right. And it's a testament to how little policy chops they do have, because look what's gotten done over the last 3.5 years. All they've really accomplished legislatively is a massive handout for the very wealthy and for big corporations in that big tax bill that tax giveaway they had back a couple of years ago. That seems to be it. Yeah.
That is it, right? Well, they've achieved chaos. They've achieved, like, tearing their party apart. I remember when I ran for Congress in 16, I was in a house party fundraiser for my campaign the weekend that Access Hollywood tape came out. And there was 100 people in this room. They're all giddy and thinking, like, this is it's over and done with. You can't come back from this. And I said, look, we shouldn't be giddy about this. Because, we still don't know what's going to happen in several weeks here. But, two, we also shouldn't enjoy, like, the destruction of a party life. Like, because I think we do need two vibrant, honest, and decent parties. And I think we can disagree with what Republicans stand for, but the party structure needs to exist. Donald Trump has torn it apart. And the Republicans let him do it, and they're going to pay dearly for this. If we make sure we do our job correctly, we can win seats up and down the ballot all across the country and have control of things in ways we haven't had in a very long time, and can not only correct the mistakes and nonsense that they've done, we can do some really, really good things, whether that's gun violence prevention, protecting women's reproductive rights, immigration, comprehensive immigration reform, healthcare reform, and do it in a substantive and meaningful way. That's what they have given us because they were that bad.
No, you're right. The reality is, I talk to conservatives who used to be conservatives are now Trump supporters. And I say, policies are you looking for them to move forward on? Because, the fact that they've done nothing to help now with another stimulus package at a time when, more than 40 million people are unemployed, millions of people are without health insurance now because of this pandemic, and we still don't have a handle on it. I'm going, what is it that they're doing, they've done, that brings you? And they just, there's nothing. They come back to, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, they're both socialists.
Right. One of my good friends, his son and my son, play soccer and basketball, at the grade school. And he's a Republican. He sent me a text the other day, not kidding. He said, Kareem, this is the first time I'm ever going to vote for a Democrat in my life. And I thought, like, this is just showing how much of a sea change we're seeing right now, where you have staunch Republicans. Joe Walsh, who's a friend of your show, right?
Yep.
Who's become one of my dear friends, thanks to you, by the way. Sent a tweet out today. Let's go kick their ass. Same guy who was dead set against helping Barack Obama do anything.
Yep.
Look how far he's come. That's how bad their guy is. You cannot be proud about that. I don't care how much money you've got. Tax breaks and all that kind of thing should not supersede the ability for your children to look up to your president or not and say, this is someone I would feel comfortable like being a role model for my child. You cannot do that with the man that currently occupies that White House.
No, you're absolutely right. So the question I have is, and this is a question that Joe and I have bounced around together, how do we reach those folks? Is there a moment of forgiveness? Is there a way to go, we got it. You had a moment. Come back to the fold. We'll embrace you with open arms. Let's figure out how to fix everything that's gone wrong, and let's move forward. Is there a way to do that?
I think so, and I think that first starts with honesty, civility, and decency. And I think Joe Biden and Kamala Harris embody those three traits. But I think the other way you do it is by policy. And I don't think you tell people you can do something and then you can't. Or you give them the pie in the sky kind of idea. You do what you are able to do, and then you keep pushing to improve upon certain things. You keep improving upon the Affordable Care Act, not tear it apart. If you want wholesale health care reform, you got to have something to build on, but then you need to have a Congress that you can have to work with, which is why we need to get more Democrats elected. And I think if we explain things to people in a way that isn't going to be divisive or corruptive or something that gets someone to retreat to their corner because we're calling whoever the opposition might be sleepy this and crying that or whatever, and talk about people in a decent and civil way, we can get back to actually doing the people's business. There are some things we definitely need to improve on. Healthcare, I think, is the number one thing people vote on. People need healthcare. Too many people are dying because they don't have access to healthcare. We need to fix that issue. But we need a Congress that's going to work with the White House to get there. Then we need state governors that are going to work with the Congress at the federal level to get those things implemented. How many red states sued the federal government over the Affordable Care Act? Wisconsin was one of them before we threw out Scott Walker. So that just shows us with just one issue. If we elect more Democrats and get them into positions of power, we can have the policy that we believe in. But these things don't happen overnight. They're going to take some time to get there. We need to be honest with people about that fact, but also remind them we have their best interest at heart. That's how you bring people back into the fold.
Yeah, as I've said a million times, I believe we all want similar things. I think we all want good, safe neighborhoods, good schools, right. Good family-sustaining wage jobs, safe jobs. I think we all want the same things. It's just we've got different roadmaps.
Right.
And
sadly, I agree. I mean, we have, like, all of us know where we want to get. We just have a different view of how to get there.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we're not always supposed to agree on everything. We shouldn't. But when we don't is where the decency and civility come into play. You don't have to be my enemy if we disagree. That's okay. It's okay to find common ground on something. That's not like you backtracking, or we should celebrate that you were able to find common ground and compromise on some things to find the best of what the two sides can get together. We've become so polarized in things, and it's not being helped by someone calling their opponent sleepy this or crying. It's so immature and childish and beneath the office that man occupies.
Yeah, as I pointed out, you know, very presidential. You know,
right.
And you get that every day. Every day you could wake up and go, you know, today's tweet or today's comment or whatever is, well, yeah. We've sunk to a new low. And, you know, when you thought you can't get any lower, it gets lower.
Yeah. There is no floor, right? He's going to keep taking us further and further down in the gutter, all while speaking gibberish. I mean, he clearly doesn't even know what he doesn't know. He just doesn't like to shut up. At some point, the people who actually know things, like Dr. Fauci, let the man talk instead of Trump getting up there talking about injecting disinfectant into the body. Like, come on. Seriously. I'm excited to have a president who doesn't think injecting disinfectant into your body is a way to deal with a global pandemic. I'm excited. That motivates me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm excited for a guy who's not going to say it's just going to go away magically. The magic thinking that's come out of Trump has been, to me, very dangerous. And I'm also excited by the fact that, you know, as we're now learning more about that, the early response to the virus was they had a response. They chose to do nothing because it was happening to Democratic states. I'm excited to have an administration who doesn't look at that first and foremost and only.
Right. I mean, because it's like what President Kennedy said. We shouldn't be looking for the Democrat answer or the Republican answer. We should be looking for the right answer. And when you consider you have 160,000 people in our country dead, their death certificate doesn't say party affiliation on it. Their loved ones don't care whether or not they're Republican or Democrat. They just care that their loved one is no longer with them.
Yeah.
We should care about that first. Partisanship should not enter in how you protect our country. But that's all he does. He vilifies the other side, all while trying to get himself on the Washington, not the Washington Monument, but the
Mount Rushmore. You believe that?
Yes. Honestly, with Donald Trump, yes, I can.
As soon as he gave that speech there, said they were giving a speech there, I go, it's not going to be long till he wants his mug on the side of it, because he puts his name on everything. So it doesn't surprise me even a little bit.
No, it doesn't. But it also shows he just simply doesn't have any self-reflection, or is he aware of the magnitude of just the simple ask of it? I mean, he's only been in office for not even a full term yet, and he wants to get on Mount Rushmore? I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, he's got some noteworthy accomplishments. He crashed an economy that was doing really well, and you know, look, he botched the virus response. Those are noteworthy. History will remember him.
That plus, I mean, he elevated white supremacists and QAnon and all that craziness. I'm sure they would agree that he should be on Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, well, I think we should have a statue of him, but we just put it in a pigeon sanctuary.
We definitely should. But at the end of the day, I think what's going to happen here is not only we're going to win in November and then have Joe get inaugurated in January, I think we're going to have a revitalization of our country, because we're so far gone down this dark rabbit hole of nonsense that we can see that we can make some simple changes in some things. And the way we conduct business, the way we can separate politics from the way our attorney general functions, the way we can make sure that the public knows that the attorney general is not your personal lawyer, the way we can stop using different governmental agencies as attack dogs against those you don't like. We can, like, reinstitute these national institutions to be what they're supposed to be instead of what they become. But I think what this does show, though, is that we just didn't have a good enough watch on the gate, right? That we might have gotten too complacent with how amazing Barack Obama was for 8 years and just didn't do a good enough job. Now we can see how far gone things can get if we don't do our job. I blame us for this.
I do too.
They cheated, sure. And all the policies they put into place to make sure black folks don't vote, they did all that. Stacey Abrams should be governor of Georgia right now if they hadn't cheated. I got that. But we still need to do our job. We know what they're going to do. The rest is up to us. Either we decide that we aren't going to let this happen anymore and make sure this country works for all of us, or we can let Donald Trump do all the kind of mob nonsense he wants to do. Think about this, though. Think about, like, he's doing the things out loud that you're supposed to say in private and doesn't care one bit. He's like John Gotti. Because he was the Dapper Don, was on all the magazines. That's Donald Trump.
Now you're spot on. Like he said, he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not lose a vote. And we're basically seeing that 165,000 people dead. And he still believes he's the guy. But
yeah.
So last bit, I want to reiterate. You're okay with Kamala Harris, right?
Oh, I'm not okay with Kamala Harris. I love this pick, without a doubt. My mom is black, my aunts are black, my daughters are black, cousins are black. This means a lot to people of color. And that glass ceiling for young girls and women around the world can see that we are really, really taking aim at that glass ceiling to really kick it through and finally see a woman be in at least the number two most important person on the planet, right? I mean, this does and says a lot for progress. And for communities of color. And I cannot wait to go vote for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in November.
There you go. Kareem, I appreciate the time. Always great talk with you. Appreciate it. Look forward to having you back again real soon.
All right, brother. Love to be on anytime.
Good stuff. Our good friend Kareem Pennebaker. He is the treasurer of the DNC's Black Caucus. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You think Harris was a good pick? You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.